It's not a vacation without a couple of risky photos, right? That's what I thought when I told my boyfriend Zach to pose on the wall of that bridge in Prague. I was just about to suggest we swap places when, in a flash, Zach's feet slipped out from under him, and he toppled backward, flailing as he fell from the bridge. I rushed to the edge of the bridge, just in time to see the big, lazy ripples spreading out from the spot where he'd gone underwater. Then, finally, Zach surfaced, gasping for air. He raised one arm and waved for me to come in. Well, he had a right to expect me to join him, after my idea got him soaking wet. The river was freezing cold. I surfaced, but didn't see Zach. I called out his name over and over, but he didn't answer. I dove down underwater, holding my breath. I searched for any sight of him, until a cold hand grabbed my leg. So Zach thought he was funny, hiding underwater to scare me? I kicked hard, propelling myself toward the surface. I could tell he swam with me, as his hand offered little resistance. But when I reached the surface, he didn't come up for breath with me. I slid my hand down and grasped his wrist, lifting it out of the water. Zach wasn't holding onto my ankle underwater. Zach's arm was. But it wasn't the arm that made me scream, or even the two frightful red eyes that appeared in front of me. It was the slow, rhythmic chanting that came from the bridge behind me, as though it demanded its newest sacrifice. Welcome to Haunted Places on the Parcast Network. I'm Greg Polson. Every Thursday, I take you to the scariest, eeriest, most haunted, real places on Earth. This week, join me on a supernatural journey to the Charles Bridge in the city of Prague and discover why, to this day, it's haunted. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoy today's show, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help us. We also now have merch. Head to parcast.com/merch for more information. Listen to more episodes of Haunted Places, as well as Parcast's other podcasts, on your favorite podcast directory. Standing proud in the center of Prague, Czech Republic, is the historic Charles Bridge, a major tourist attraction and pedestrian thoroughfare with a dark past. Completed in 1390, the stone bridge spans 612 meters over the river Vltava. Standing in the shadow of Prague Castle, the Gothic stone architecture complements the beautiful historic city that surrounds it. Lining the bridge are 30 larger-than-life Baroque statues that loom tall over passing visitors and mark the skyline with their height. Most of the statues honor various saints, but some also serve as historical landmarks, such as the statuary of the St. Cross with Calvary, a large crucifix with gold detailing. Centuries ago, major events were commonly held in front of the statue, including public executions of criminals. In 1621, for example, 27 leaders of a revolt against the Habsburg monarchy were executed. 12 of their heads were lopped off, stuck on poles, and placed along the bridge, left to the mercy of the elements and a thriving local crow population. According to records, the severed heads remained on the bridge for long over a decade, And according to some visitors, their souls remained even longer. The only heads on the bridge today, however, are those of its many statues. And one of the most notable statues on the bridge is the very first to be erected, the statue of St. John of Nepomuk, one of the national saints of the Czech Republic. One day, in 1393, the Queen of Bohemia came to Father John of Nepomuk, a priest, for confession. Later that same evening, John settled into bed. Just then, a loud pounding came at the front door. He got up to answer, and was greeted by King Wenceslaus IV, the Queen's husband. Before John could ask any questions, the king shoved him to the floor and placed his foot on Father John's chest with crushing force. He demanded to know what sins his queen had confessed to this common priest. In a state of shock, the priest merely stammered at the feet of the king. The bond of the confession booth was sacred. He would not break its trust, even for a monarch. The king savagely beat John, kicking him in his ribs, his legs, his chest. And yet, the priest remained loyal to the queen and to his faith. Pain would not bend him. Fear would not break him. This was the will of God, and John knew it was invulnerable. Then the last kick struck John's face, and he blacked out. The priest awoke, chained up in an unfamiliar room. The smell of burnt hair, vile-looking instruments on the walls, whips, arrows, chains, daggers, shadows from the fire, dancing, pointed, threatening shadows. Now, a hooded man emerged. A hooded man with a black robe. The priest could not see his face. Everything seemed to disappear beneath his shroud. A shadow incarnate. An embodiment of evil. The hood asked if John was ready to cooperate with the king's wishes. The priest remained silent. The hooded man grabbed a torch off the wall and walked over to the fire pit, igniting the torch with flames. He returned to John's side, holding the blazing torch. Still, John spoke not a word. The priest knew what would happen next. Time passed. The fire came. His skin burned. The fire left. Again and again, the hooded man came. Again and again, the priest screamed in the echoing cell. His scars were black. He felt so weak, he could hardly raise his head. Still, his faith allowed him to endure the pain. If this was a test of the will of God, John would withstand it. Then he heard the king talk to the hooded man. He mentioned the bridge. He mentioned a rope for hanging. Good, the priest thought. It shall be over soon. Soon enough, John of Nepomuk hung suspended from the bridge by his ankles. His lips cracked. His stomach growled. Food and water seemed a luxury from a distant past. The bridge spoke to him, whispered, chanted, prayed. It told him the word of God. This is your home, it said, the bridge between worlds. John became stone. He became part of the bridge, hardened, stout, and completely silent. After 2 weeks, the king and his men returned to the bridge and asked if the priest was ready to speak. The priest did not respond. He stood on the bridge, ragged, thin, pale, completely decrepit. And yet, he seemed to stand straighter and taller than the king, to look down on him. The king flew into a rage and decided to exact his final revenge. First, he cut off John's tongue in retaliation for its failure to speak the queen's secrets. Next, the king dressed John in heavy armor and threw him off the bridge. John only breathed a sigh of relief. Stones may sink, but they do not die. It's said that after John of Nepomuk sank to the riverbed below, five bright stars appeared in the sky, directly above where he drowned, giving the water a glow which helped people to find his body. For his extraordinary faith and martyrdom, John was named a Saint of Bohemia. After it was pulled from the river, Saint John's body was placed in a tomb in a cathedral in Prague. When his corpse was exhumed later, in 1719, a small red item fell to the floor. It was his severed tongue, looking as fresh as the day it fell from his mouth, over 300 years before. The disgusting spectacle was lauded as a miracle and a sign from God that John's loyalty in holding his tongue had been rewarded in the afterlife. To honor St. John's sacrifice for his religion and his queen, a statue was placed on Charles Bridge, where he died. The statue was adorned with a halo of five stars, commemorating the five stars seen in the sky at the time of his death. Even today, many people in the Czech Republic pray to St. John, asking him for protection against floods, drowning, and defamation. Although St. John is said to work miracles for those who seek his help, there's a darker side to his supernatural presence on the Charles Bridge. Shortly after St. John was killed, a drought enveloped the kingdom, causing famine and suffering throughout the land. According to the church, this drought was a divine punishment for the king's murder of a respected priest. Some even say the drought wasn't St. John's only act of revenge on the bloodthirsty king. Coming up, we'll have more of the imprint St. John left on the Charles Bridge. Now, back to the story. In the Middle Ages, it was common for architects to pray and seek out blessings from heaven when crafting or repairing a complex structure, such as a building or bridge, in order to ensure the quality and safety of its construction. In the case of the haunted Charles Bridge, however, one architect took the opposite approach. After St. John's death in 1393, at the exact location on the bridge where the king cast St. John into the water, one of the bridge's large arches suddenly collapsed, splitting the Charles Bridge in two. But when workers came to repair the bridge, it only crumbled again. For weeks, builders worked tirelessly to repair the bridge's faulty arch, and time again, the arch collapsed. Rumors spread that God was punishing the town for the king's murder of St. John. People began to despair of ever crossing again. Builders started to refuse work on the project, believing the bridge was cursed to never be repaired again. Desperate, city leaders offered a monetary prize for the person who could fix the bridge once and for all. Soon, a young architect named Nathaniel came forward, claiming to have hatched a foolproof plan to fix the bridge. Nathaniel noticed that the bridge always collapsed overnight, forcing work to be restarted the next day. Nathaniel proposed that if he built the bridge in one day, the supposed curse would end for good. The builders who had worked for weeks laughed at Nathaniel, But he was undeterred. He was newly married, with his first child on the way. The money would be a great help to him. What's more, he promised he would do all the work himself, making sure no detail was amiss. With Nathaniel bound and determined to put his plan into action, there was nothing the builders could do to stop him. So Nathaniel got to work and continued tirelessly into the night. When he was ready to place the last stone, the clock struck midnight, and the ground began to shake. A cold wind whipped across the bridge, nearly toppling Nathaniel into the river. The architect held fast to his scaffolding and tools, but as the rumbling got more and more intense, he was forced to jump out of the way just as the arch began to split in two, right under his feet. The rocks fell. His tools splashed into the water below. He barely made it to stable ground as the arch collapsed into rubble. The anguish struck him with ferocity. It was one thing to disappoint the townspeople, but to come home empty-handed to his pregnant wife? That was unforgivable. Suddenly, an echo of laughter penetrated the air, and a shrill voice cut through the wind. It wants a bridge, and yet it does not build. It sits there, weeping and weeping. Pathetic. Oh, so pathetic. Nathaniel's world grew foggy. His mind felt loose. He could think only of the bridge. He must finish the bridge. He felt cold, wet fingers drape over his shoulders and caress his skin. It filled him with a terrible dread. But he was paralyzed, his eyes fixated only on the rubble below. It's a simple thing, yes. Lay one brick, lay the next. Then you have a bridge. But the pathetic little puppet has failed. So much it has failed. Nathaniel felt as though he would collapse and fall asleep. He was so tired, his muscles exhausted. But the cold fingers held him aloft. Oh, the dreams the puppet has. Glory and riches and adoration. Such a simple thing. Lay one brick, lay the next. Then you have a bridge. This I can do. These bricks I can lay. But under one condition. Nathaniel could think only of the bridge. It was the only thing he wanted. To finish the job, to cross to the other side. Yes, yes, the only thing. But how bad does it want it? How much would it give? To lay one brick, then lay the next. This type of work has a price. A vision swam before Nathaniel's eyes. He saw himself cross the bridge, the completed bridge. Before he could reach the end, he collapsed to the ground and perished. A fair price, yes. A fair price for glory and riches and adoration. Just one measly, pathetic little puppet. Nathaniel felt his head move in a slow nod. Yes, it was fair. Anything was fair to finish the bridge. It makes a deal. It must follow the rules. And then the fingers were gone, and the fog lifted. Nathaniel suddenly felt exhausted, more tired than he'd ever been in his entire life. His head lolled on his chest, and he fell to the ground, sprawled out like a rag doll. When Nathaniel came to, the arch on the Charles Bridge was perfectly restored. His head pounded with the memories from the night before. He knew right away what his vision meant. The knowledge was almost seared into his mind. The first thing to cross this bridge would die. He steeled himself, knowing what he must do. He would cross the bridge first, himself. Though he hated the thought of never knowing his baby and of leaving his wife a widow, this was his responsibility. He had promised to complete the bridge. Nathaniel was about to step onto the platform when, out of the corner of his eye, he spotted a black cat darting through the grass. A cat. What if he could break the curse with a cat? Brilliant. The young architect gave chase. He did not have much time before the locals started waking up. At that very moment, across town, Nathaniel's pregnant wife, Petra, suddenly sat bolt upright in bed. She could see Nathaniel standing on the bridge. Although she was wide awake, the vision was as clear as the clearest dream. She saw him accepting a purse full of gold coins. And then, at the moment the money changed hands, she saw the arch collapse on top of him. His body was crushed and broken by a hail of shattering stones. As the villagers watched in horror, Nathaniel was buried alive under the weight of the arch he had labored so hard to fix. Petra felt strongly that this was no nightmare, but a premonition of something that would happen very, very soon. She knew in her gut that her husband was in trouble and that she had to save him. Petra raced out of the house in the direction of the bridge, running as fast as she could while so heavily pregnant. As she passed through the doorway of her home and ran out into the street, she was so focused on finding Nathaniel, she failed to see the thick fog that trailed behind her. Fog that almost seemed to laugh. When Petra reached the bridge, she saw Nathaniel on the other side. Alive! He was alive! He looked distracted, running in circles as though chasing something. But the job was complete. The arch stood firm, and she nearly shouted with happiness. She ran across the bridge to greet him, full of pride and joy and respect for her husband. But when he turned to her, holding a black cat in his hands, she could not understand why his face was so pale. She could not understand his terrible, anguished scream. The next day, Nathaniel's wife died in childbirth, along with their son. Nathaniel was rewarded, as promised, for fixing the bridge. However, without a family to support, the money felt empty and pointless. He locked himself up in his home. He couldn't face the world after sending his wife and only son to what he could only imagine must be an eternity of horror. Guilt turned his hair gray and weathered his face. His clothes, which he never changed, turned to tatters. People in the village began to say he was mad. Children whispered when they passed his house. Even his oldest friends no longer recognized the hollow, bony man they occasionally glimpsed through a window. When he was able to sleep, he curled up on a straw mat, leaving the bed he'd once shared with his wife to gather cobwebs. He was more a shadow than a man, stuck between two worlds. Then, one night, as he lay awake, he heard it. A baby's cry. It sounded as if it was coming from outside of the house. Nathaniel shot out of bed and raced outside, expecting, in his madness, to find his unborn son. He pushed open the heavy wooden door and frantically searched left and right in the pale moonlight. Nothing but a few grazing sheep. But then he heard it again, faintly, but still close by. Nathaniel closely followed the sound. It took him through the village and into the city. And then it took him onto that beautiful stone bridge, a bridge he hadn't set foot on since the incident. The cry was at its loudest at the very arch where he made his deal with the creature. It sounded like it was coming from right underneath the bridge, as if the baby was floating gently down the river. Suddenly, Nathaniel realized what he needed to do. If he could rescue his baby from the water, his family would be whole again. In a single motion, he leapt from the bridge and dove in at the spot where he heard the baby's cries loudest. Nathaniel was never heard from again. St. John's Arch, the one that collapsed repeatedly after the murder of St. John, is today marked by a metal cross and a red gemstone. Some historians say the arch was damaged in a bad flood shortly before St. John's murder in 1393. Others say St. John placed a curse on the bridge as he drowned. All that is known for sure, however, is that no damage has come to the arch since it was rebuilt in one night by a desperate architect. Some say that if you stand in just the right place at just the right time of night, you can still hear Nathaniel's son crying pitifully in the water. Coming up, we'll have more on the haunting tragedy that still lingers on Charles Bridge. Now back to the story. It was a cold, blustery November evening. Wind nipped me as I aimlessly walked the streets of Prague. Christmas lights already twinkled in some of the windows. I could see families sitting down together to dinner. I jammed my cold hands into my pockets and kept walking. Just a few hours prior, I was on top of the world, ready to propose marriage to the love of my life. I was planning our life together and anticipating how beautiful she would look as a bride. I was so nervous the night before my planned proposal that I kept waking up in a cold sweat. Over and over, I had the same nightmare about being followed by an invisible man. But I never imagined she wouldn't even show up for dinner. I thought something must have happened to her. I even started forming a search party until her best friend arrived to tell me she wasn't coming. While I was cooking a proposal dinner in front of both of our families, she was moving out of our apartment. And now, here I was, lost, alone, and completely hopeless, wandering the cold streets of Prague. After a while, I couldn't shake the feeling that someone was following me. I even fancied I'd heard the very same footsteps from my nightmares of the night before. Nervous, I started looking over my shoulder and walking a little faster, especially down the dark alleyways. Then I became certain I heard footsteps, real ones. Not an echo of my dreams. It was as if my bad luck had physically manifested, and it was following me. I started sprinting, trying to get away from whatever it was. I made a spontaneous sharp turn, then another, doubling back on myself. But each time I changed direction, I heard it ahead of me, or behind me, forcing me to move farther and farther away from my apartment. After running to the point of exhaustion, I suddenly realized the footsteps were no longer following me. I looked around, trying to get my bearings, and realized I was at the foot of the Charles Bridge. At the late hour, this usually busy bridge, was deserted. I'd never seen it so empty. It seemed larger than life, like a medieval drawbridge leading to a giant's castle. I'm not sure what came over me. It was out of the way, but I started to cross, as though the answers I was looking for were on the other side. The night seemed like it was getting darker the farther I walked across the bridge, and the wind got colder. Suddenly, my eyes fell on an unfamiliar sight. A small red cross in the center of the bridge. It glowed faintly, its light reflecting in the foggy air. We had often walked this bridge together, my would-be bride and I. We had our first kiss under St. John's Arch. On the rare occasions when we argued and I stormed out of the house, it was here I would come to clear my head. I knew every inch of this bridge, and I knew, as surely as I knew my own name, that this cross wasn't supposed to be here. A chill ran down my spine. I wanted to run, yet my legs buckled, and I fell to my knees in front of the cross. I hadn't prayed in years. As the wind got louder around me, I raged at God until I had no anger left to vent. I begged him to let me die now, if I didn't deserve even the slightest happiness, if I was meant to feel so alone forever. As I lifted my head, I saw the vast stone bridge no longer stood empty. Men's voices prayed all around me. Through the thick fog, I could see dozens, maybe hundreds of figures surrounding me, all on their knees, praying. I could hardly make out the closest man, shrouded in fog as he was. He wore only rags. His beard was long and unkempt. His ribs showed through his torn tunic. All around me, the spectral men looked up from their prayers, their dead eyes fixated on me. Then I heard the footsteps, the same as those that were following me earlier, with the same slight limp, the same dragging foot. But this time, I saw the man. He was tall, imposing, dressed all in black, with a black hood covering his face. In his right hand, he carried a noose. The kneeling men parted to let him through. Squinting through the fog, I realized, for the first time, that all the men around me wore handcuffs and leg irons, all except the hooded man, who steadily approached, swinging his noose. I scrambled to my feet and turned to run, but I felt like my feet were stuck in molasses. I struggled just to lift one foot and take a single step away from the hooded figure striding ever closer through the fog. Finally, with a mighty effort, I turned around to make a run for it and found myself face to face with a bloody, severed head. The skull was exposed in some parts, and the face was twisted into an incredibly pained expression. The body which cradled the head was itself headless. I barely had time to process before I felt the rope draped over my head and around my neck. All across the bridge, I could see the handcuffed men standing and shuffling closer to me to get a better look. Some of the ghastly men looked like they had just been pulled from the bottom of the river, with wet hair and skin that looked deathly blue. Some looked like they were wealthy noblemen, and others looked like beggars. But they all shared one thing in common. They all looked excited about my impending demise. The noose tightened around my neck. I could smell death on the executioner. Ringed by ghostly men and their eager, hungry stares, I started losing consciousness. Just then, I heard someone new approaching. The rope around my neck loosened as I gasped for breath and the life came back to my lungs. I saw him. The statue of St. John, wearing his halo of five stars, towered over me. He extended a long stone arm and pointed accusingly to the hooded executioner behind me. Under St. John's withering gaze, the 7-foot-tall killer squirmed. The executioner released me. I collapsed there at the statue's feet, struggling to force air back into my lungs. As he leaned over me, he opened his mouth to speak, but all that came out was a torrent of blood and his tongue, which splashed into the red puddle on the ground. A glimmer of light caught my eye as I realized the sun was beginning to rise. All around me, the ghostly men disappeared. The red cross hanging on the bridge stopped glowing, then vanished entirely. St. John returned to his pedestal, and with a final smile at me, became nothing more than a statue again. As I rose to my feet, my lungs still burning, I wondered if I had dreamed the whole thing. I didn't get an answer to that question until I walked all the way back to my apartment, to my old familiar bathroom mirror. I saw the rope burns encircling my neck. Ever since then, whenever I step foot on the Charles Bridge, those old scars burn like fresh wounds. And yet, I still visit the bridge and the statue of St. John every chance I get. I never saw the little red cross again, but from a dusty book in my grandmother's attic, I learned that convicts were once forced to pray on the Charles Bridge before being executed. Whenever I cross the bridge now, the pain in my neck reminds me of the night I asked to die, but was saved by a stoic saint. Bridges are often thought of as gateways to new lands, new destinations, and the Charles Bridge is no different. Except in its case, the destination seems to be in another plane of existence. No matter the path you plan to travel, the Charles Bridge is likely to pull the curious, the adventurous, and the heartbroken off course, enticing and entrancing all those who seek mystery above its stone arches. The question is, will you follow its path? Will you dare to see what's on the other side? Thanks again for tuning into Haunted Places. We'll be back next Thursday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Haunted Places, as well as all of Parcast's other podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcast directory. Several of you have asked how to help us. If you enjoy the show, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. I'll see you next week. Haunted Places was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Carly Madden and Maggie Admire. Haunted Places is written by Kaylee Huffman. I'm Greg Polson.